Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock. It's Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christine, and I'm the host of your show. Sitting over here looking at the lovely, charming Bobby Jean Bell, who's been under the weather this week.
I have been under the weather, but I'm here.
Well, the bookie's under the weather today. Oh. I was under the weather Monday and Tuesday. Oh. I'm going to do a Rush Limbaugh.
So the weather just came across to my house.
Probably. We just passed it on.
Oh, there you go.
Studio to studio.
Well, I hope Jerry feels better.
Oh, me too, because, hey, we have a really good show for you tonight. If you want to call in and talk to our guests, the number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, and by our only paying.
And we love them.
Advertiser, and we do love them.
And we love them.
Target Freight Management, in which we'll be getting into some commercials for them very soon. Bobby, why don't you introduce our guests?
I'm happy to do that. Tonight, our guest is Bill Wilbur, and consider me a fan. Do you enjoy riveting and surprising short stories? How about a great Western? Or maybe for you, the play's the thing. Tonight's guest, Bill Wilbur, covers all of these genres with style, finesse, and high energy. His Western, Saragossa, came across my desk when it was first published, and I read it in one sitting. Not because it's short, but because I found it engaging, captivating, and page-turning with every page an adrenaline rush. And then I met the author. Bill is a gentleman, a man of many talents. His passion for the West comes across loud and clear, and he parlays his passion for writing into an encouragement to others. The author of both gritty and witty prose, like this line from his imaginative short story, Shoe Envy, Glinda, Come at Once, It Involves Shoes, Love, Cindy. Please welcome to The Writer's Block, Bill Wilbur.
Hi, everybody. I don't know how I can live up to that.
And we have a guest besides Bill in the studio. Bill, who's with you?
Well, I brought with me today Ray Ramirez, who is the producer slash director of the movie version of Saragossa. And I'll introduce Ray.
Oh, well, thank you, everybody. Hi, I'm Ray. I'm Ray Ramirez. I'm glad to be here.
Happy. Well, hi, Ray. Welcome to the Writer's Block.
It's really fun to have so many people in the studio. All
I know.
On, headphones
and they're,
on.
And they're all on microphones.
Yeah, they're all on microphones.
So we're not just calling in.
No. No. Yeah. No, we do a lot more call-ins than we have people in the studio, though.
I know, but it's so fun when they're able to be in the studio because we can see when they have something to say and they're not just letting the dog out.
You right. Know? Well, it's also a lot easier to control them.
Well, we'll see.
We're not easily controlled.
Hey, I got on Bill's blog spot today.
Yes.
And I have to bring this up because you're the only person I've ever known that actually got hit by lightning.
Yeah. Well, my car did.
I'm reading from your five strange things you don't know about me.
Oh, gosh.
Uh-huh. Did you forget you wrote that?
I didn't forget I wrote it. I don't remember what's in it, though.
Oh, you probably don't want to read it again.
I think one of them was about gargling, wasn't it?
Yes, gargling. You can't gargle.
I don't know if I want to hear any of this.
He's not ticklish. He was struck by lightning. Coughing up a lung. We don't want to. I saw a UFO once, too.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Oregon. It was like this blue thing that just flashed across the sky.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's totally. It just makes you stop and drool.
Does everybody call you crazy, too?
No.
No.
No, we just roll our eyes.
I was with my mother and father, and they're both deceased, so nobody's around to call me crazy. Right. No, anyway.
My sister was with me, but she was asleep. So.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, yeah, she's a witness, but really not.
No.
Saragossa. Great book.
Thank you very much.
I
like it.
Where did you come up with the story? Because I just the story is familiar, but it's not familiar.
The story involves two brothers,
right,
who are vastly different in many ways. And initially, it was a story about my brother and I. Neither one of us has been a sheriff or in prison, but it was about two brothers who were different, as my brother and I are. And I initially wrote it for my father. When I was growing up, that's what my father and I had together. That was our thing. We're Westerns, you know. All the movies, all the books. He read every Louis L'Amour book in existence, and when he finished them, he started over again. It's all he ever read. And so I wanted to write something for him, and that's where Saragossa came from.
Hmm. And you said it in 1883.
Yes.
In New Mexico. Well, it starts 10 years earlier with a brief kind of prologue that introduces us to some of the characters. But the majority of the book is 1883. Is there a reason that you chose that particular time and the New Mexico territory?
I wanted it to be after Billy the Kid.
That would be 1883.
Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
And you brought in a Billy the Kid character.
I did.
Short time.
He's actually, Reinerson is the bad guy, District Attorney Reinerson,
mm-hmm.
who is actually a historical figure that was trying Billy the Kid.
Right.
It's one of the only true historical characters in the book.
And J.J. Dolan.
Right, J.J. Dolan and Murphy.
Right.
Oh, and Murphy.
Yeah, all of those were important to Billy the Kid. It's set in Billy the Kid country, but it is not about Billy the Kid.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And we've got good guys and really bad guys. And I see you just looked at Ray, and Ray, tell us a little bit about the good guys and the bad guys.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because we, when we were looking to kind of show people what we wanted to do as a feature film for this book, which some might say, arguably, even though his novel is great, screenplay is even better.
Oh, I don't know about that.
And we wanted to show a little trailer to people, so we wrote together, for the most part, a little treatment that we wanted to film. And one of the lines was, you know, they're good guys, they're bad guys. So we could show within the snippets, you know, our good characters, our bad characters. So everybody kind of knew what we wanted to accomplish with our feature film. So, yeah, it was always a way to show people, you know, what we wanted to accomplish by showing these good guys and these bad guys coming into town, coming up like a traditional Western, which is what we wanted to show. It's not some sci-fi hybrid. It is a traditional Western, which is what more people want to see, as opposed to these hybrids that Hollywood are trying to make that are failing mm-hmm. because they're not a traditional Western.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You must have a question, Jim.
I don't have a question. I just have a comment.
Oh, good.
Because the book that I just finished, The Return, is actually a character brought back from The Dark Angel. And it was a demon that got away, and now he's in Louisiana raising hell in St. Landry Parish. And but he's got 16 times more power than he ever did, and and he's just running all over the place. He turns into a raven to go find his people he's looking for, because he can't feel them. They're righteous, and he can't locate them. Can't locate righteous people. So it's a Western, but it's
a spiritual.
It's kind of a.
Now, in Saragossa, so we're talking about the good guys and the bad guys. So we've got the Santa Fe ring. Tell us a little bit about these characters that make up the Santa Fe ring.
Santa Fe ring, we mentioned them already, Reinerson and Murphy Dolan. They were in cahoots with the corrupt government of New Mexico at the time. And they formed this Santa Fe ring, which took over the territory in terms of supplying all of the farmers with their beef and supplying mm-hmm. all of the sundries that they would need at the store. And they forced out every bit of competition they had. So they were actual historically the bad guys in New Mexico in this time frame. And I felt that they were sort of perfect to tell a different story about them in Saragossa.
Mm-hmm. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Murphy Dolan faction, which owned the general store,
right?
Murphy had died in like 1876.
Yeah,
and it was just Dolan.
Dolan took over.
Right. Right.
And then we have the two brothers.
The two brothers.
So we have Orrin and Brody.
Orrin Brody McNeil. Yes.
And tell us a little bit about each of them and then how they meet up again after years being apart.
Brody was the older brother and very stalwart. He was the righteous brother. He was the guy who did everything that a old West hero cowboy would do. Treated women with respect, followed the letter of the law, enforced the law as much as he could, and was respected by everybody. And his brother, Orin, had many of those same qualities and ran afoul of the government early in his career as a tracker and sort of got railroaded into prison. And from there, he did his time. He had a 10-year sentence, and he did his time very easy and very calm. He didn't cause any trouble until the guards, who were corrupt at the prison, decided that it was his turn to be hung out in the to be hanged. Sorry, out in the courtyard. So he escaped, and he went looking for his brother, just to sort of make amends and reconnect. And he got into town just at the time where the Santa Fe Ring was trying to take over the town. So they sort of had to put their differences aside to rescue the town.
These are two remarkable characters.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like Walt Longmire even, you know, nothing can put them down. I mean, they just come up, at, you know, they go into fights and they still come back, you know, they come back from all kinds of physical engagement, and very captivating. And of course, Brody is sort of out for a lot of the book, and Orin
truly,
Orin steps in to the breach.
Brody gets shot a little bit more than a third of the way into the book, and so Orin does have to step into his shoes, primarily on the vengeance trail, obviously, to go after the guys who did it, but in so doing, takes up the cause.
Sees the light.
Well, he was never really a bad guy.
Right.
You know? Just in a bad situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, when one went down, the other one stepped in, and then when the other one left, Brody had to come back up, and then, you know, Orin comes back, and then they all come together at the end.
Yeah.
So.
God, my brother, you know what my brother would say? Huh?
well, it's a story of redemption. I mean, it's a redemption justice story.
It is.
It's dusty, too.
Oh, his descriptions.
I know. I was sitting there reading that going, holy crap.
You know, they go into the Silver Star. Is it the Silver Star Saloon?
It is. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you watch a saloon scene, you hear the little piano and you get that sense of, you know, that space. But film can't show us the smells. It can't show us, you know, months and months of perspiration and sweat. And you make – there's no romance of the West in this book, by the way. We're seeing the dust and the grime. And, yes, there's beauty to this landscape as well as dissolution in the landscape. But that's – the saloon scenes is like, oh, why would you ever want to go in one?
Well, that's all they had back then. And there is a little bit of romance in there, by the way.
I was wondering if you're going to bring
that up. Just a little bit.
There is a little bit of romance. Tell us about Sarah.
Sarah, I felt like I needed a female character
mm-hmm.
when I was writing it. I was young and naive when I wrote it. And you have to realize I had been weaned on the Westerns of the 50s and 60s and 70s. And it was all white hats and black hats back then. And so that's where I drew my story from. Sarah was a respite in the heat and in the desert and in the dust that you see. And I'm happy to say in the sequel there are more than one female character.
Oh, the sequel.
I actually waited until, what, book number 10 to put a woman in there?
I know. And then you killed her.
I actually killed them both.
That's not nice.
Well, but you know, the Apaches had a way of doing that.
They did. They did indeed.
And you do. You have Apaches play a role in this book as well. There's Joe.
Joe Dog.
Mm-hmm.
No.
You might want to ask Ray here about Joe Dog.
I was wondering when this was going to happen. I knew sooner or later he was going to bring this up.
Okay, Ray, what about Joe Dog?
Joe Dog is, I guess, a character that Bill has a fondness for. Maybe a lot of other people that have read the book have enjoyed. And I figured he was the one character, when I was writing the screenplay, that needed to go. There was a lot of these side stories that I thought needed to go. I needed to trim it. I originally wrote it. It was a 120-page screenplay, and that's a very long feature film. We're trying to make it at a certain budget. I needed to chop off a lot of it and get it to about 100. 100 was a good number. And Joe Dog was one of the characters, a little side story that I thought could go away, and another character that I liked more, now no offense to Joe Dog, could step in his shoes and do the heroic deed that he does in the book in the film. So Bill always wants me to write him back in. But if there is a sequel, which Joe Dog is a part of, I have already have in my mind exactly how it'll play out for the sequel. So I keep telling him it's going to be fine. He will come back. There will be flashbacks to the original to show why they didn't intersect the first one and why he's such an integral part in the second one. But I don't know. I don't think he trusts my vision sometimes. But
if there's anything that we've fought about in the adaptation, it's this. It's this. Every single chance I get, I bring up the fact that Joe Dog needs to be put back in.
Oh, hell, just put him in the sequel.
He plays a big part
well,
in the
book. He plays a big part in the book, but he's a surprise in a way.
Right.
You know, he's a character that's introduced early. And then he does. He plays this major role later on when you kind of go like, oh, we didn't forget about him. Oh, no. This is pretty cool. This action that he's doing.
It kind of reminds me of the Apache Kid.
Yeah. Now, there's a young man in this book, Ricky.
Yeah.
And I can't help but think a little bit about The Shootist and, you know, some other books where there's sort of young people that step up. And I really liked Ricky a lot. Tell us a little bit about him.
Ricky, I felt after I had finished the book, I felt that Ricky became the true heart of the story. And it really wasn't about him at all. It was about... he was a minor character all the way, in my opinion, but he has sort of become a lot of fans like him. He's a very young and cocky kid in the Old West who, like many kids, thinks he's faster and better and more righteous than others. And the truth of Ricky is that he is faster than everybody. His nickname is Blaze. His name is Ricky Ablaza, so that was a natural nickname. And somehow he became the heart. He became the arc in the story that sort of propelled it at some level. He started the book as a boy, and he ended the book as a man. And it was because of the brothers that he did that.
Well, and he definitely grows, but he's different than, let's say, Cole, who we meet early in the book and leaves us early in the book, who's a young sort of gunslinger kind of guy, in that Ricky has respect for the adult characters, mm-hmm. Even though he is a little cocky and he has some attitude. It still doesn't. He still kind of follows what they, you know, tell him to do. No,
right.
Stay here, do this, do that. But yeah, he becomes. I'm assuming he'll have a large role in the sequel.
He's got a bigger role in the sequel. Yeah, Joe Dog is in the sequel.
Yeah, I know. Thank you for that.
We're putting that on tape right now. Joe Dog is in the sequel.
Good old Joe Dog.
Quite aware.
I'll never forget what's his name. Joe Dog. Hey, you got to do a commercial.
Oh, is it that time?
It is that time.
Are you doing? Are you going first?
No, you are.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we want to thank our sponsor, Target Freight Truckland, TFM. They are a division of Target Freight Management and, quite honestly, the finest truckload company in the United States. If you are looking for a reputable freight company for full truckloads that get to you 100% of the time, call Target Freight TFM Truckload. Call them today. Now, here's the number. So write this down. Get out your cell phone. Get it in there. 1-844-653-7789. Tell them you heard this on the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something special for you. 1-844-653-7789.
Nicely done. They actually,
we're so grateful to them.
I know. They actually really are nice people. In fact, the president of Target Freight will be in my office next Wednesday.
We should have him on the show.
Well, he's not going to be here
long. Well, he should call in.
I would love to have him
and
call
he could
in.
Just call in and...
And do his own commercial.
Do his own commercial. You can write it for him.
Okay, then.
You're a writer.
There you go. Okay, back to Joe Dog.
Back to Joe Dog.
You must have a question, Joe.
I do. Actually, I want to kind of break away from Saragossa for a bit and kind of get into your head about what your process is when you're writing, when you're sitting down and you got a fresh sheet in front of you and virtually no ideas.
Yeah, the ideas always come out of left field, you know, and many times they come when I'm driving, because in L.A. we drive everywhere and it takes an hour to get to any place. And so my mind wanders. But usually it is starts with the question, wouldn't it be cool if wouldn't it be cool if this happened? How would you get out of it, you know, or where would you go from here? If you found yourself in this situation, where would you go?
Mm-hmm.
In one of my other books, Dahlia, which is a collection of short stories, I used to stop at a liquor store early in the morning for a Pepsi. Yes, I said it. I was not a coffee drinker, but I was addicted to Pepsi back then.
Are we allowed to say Pepsi on the...
Sure.
No. Say well, better to want. Stop at the, early in the morning in a liquor store for a Pepsi than probably
That's
something
true.
Else.
The woman that worked there in the mornings, her name was Dahlia. The first time she told me her name, by the time I drove out of the parking lot, I had this character created of Dahlia, which looked nothing like the girl in the store, but I had this character created. By the time I was on the freeway, I had the story, which was a murder mystery in a retirement home.
It's a great story.
Thank you. So they just come out of nowhere, you know, mm-hmm. And my process in writing, I tend not to plot them out ahead of time because I feel like any good story, from the writer's perspective, the characters have to lead you somewhere. It's good to have an idea where you're going generally, I think, but for me, it never worked to follow an outline.
No. And, you know, Craig Johnson said exactly the opposite.
Exactly.
He he said he outlines the hell out of everything.
Yeah. Well, and he's more successful than I am.
Well, he just got incredibly lucky with Longmire.
Well. That's one reason we love to hear what the process is, because
right.
it is the,
right.
shows you that there's no one way. It's whatever
what works for
works
you.
For
right.
you.
Yeah.
And Dahlia is a great story and took us. You're able to cover a lot in a short amount of time, and you are a short story writer as much as Saragossa is a novel. I think you write a lot of short stories.
I love short stories. I they're more succinct. And it's tougher to tell a complete story, I think. There's no wasted words in a short story. In a novel, you have to fluff a little bit.
Yeah, you can't afford to waste words.
Yeah. I love writing short stories. Unfortunately, there are only a handful of authors who can get a book of short stories published. But I think the medium's coming back. I think people have a shorter attention span, and I think people are getting behind short stories a little bit. I hope so.
You know, we had Gary Phillips on, I want to say 2-3 months ago,
mm-hmm.
and he's really, really, really involved in pulp fiction. And it's kind of like almost the same thing, because the pulp book that he sent us was 15 short stories
mm-hmm.
primarily.
Right.
They were, of course, the heroes were like, you know,
right,
Louis
right.
the More Heroes.
And,
yeah sure. But it's the same premise. I'm fairly certain. I don't know. I've never written a short story. Well, yeah, that's all I did.
Well, and I know that you enter some competitions, short story competitions.
I do. Yeah, I do once in a while, generally once a year. I think it keeps me fresh. And the short story competition that I generally enter every year, they supply you with a character and a genre and a conflict, and you have to come up with something. And many times they don't go together at all, but you have a ticking clock behind you to do it. And some of those made it into the Dahlia book as well.
Now, we met a long time ago now.
We did.
And you had a very captivating idea for a short story presentation that we did. And we called it Writer in the Window,
mm-hmm.
because you actually wrote the short story in a window where people could watch you write.
Much like a monkey in the zoo. Yes.
Yeah. And that was an interesting concept that we had come up with. Do you remember how we went about doing that?
I remember that. You were at the Autry Center, and we walked around the museum, and you picked out, I think it was eight different items, six or eight items, mm-hmm. I don't remember which, that pertained to the time period we were talking about, and you challenged me to put all of them into a short story. I think I had 2 hours to mm-hmm. do it. And good or bad, right or wrong, I had to read what I had written yep. to whoever decided to stick around without any corrections. It was daunting.
It was a really wonderful experience.
It was a lot of fun, I got to admit.
Well, like I said, I can remember him sitting on the porch at the Cowboy Festival.
Yeah,
with his laptop.
Again,
yeah,
too.
Writing children's stories.
Yeah.
Was that a children's story that we did?
Well, the first one, not necessarily. But I had taken, we took a group, I did a docent-led tour.
Right.
And we said to everybody there, I hit on all of those objects so right. that you also could know a little bit about the object if you needed that for any reason. And then we encouraged people to come back into the store like 2 hours later to right. hear what you had, put together. And it was really, I thought, a wonderful idea that you had, because you teach also writing, don't you?
I teach writing, yes.
So these kinds of exercises have to be really good for students of writing, that
yeah.
want to write.
Yeah.
I do better under pressure. Like, if I have a ticking clock, I do much better than if I'm left to my own devices.
Is that right?
It is. Huh. It is, yeah. I tend to procrastinate quite a bit. I'm a lazy writer, if I can get away with it. My wife is at home right now, nodding her head.
My wife, too.
Now, do you try to write something every day, or do you tell us about, is there a discipline?
I do that for a while. Yeah, I tend to do that, and then I'll find a reason not to one day, and it takes me a week or so to get back to it again. I have another novel that is probably 60 pages from being done that has sat in that state for about 2 years now. And the sequel has been a couple of years coming now, but I've been remotivated to get it all going again. So,
now, did you write the adaptation for the film?
I didn't. Okay. I made a couple of small changes, but Ray wrote the adaptation for the film and the play, actually.
I did.
Oh, the play. Do you want it?
The play, that's right. You guys have a stage play.
For Saragossa, we did do a stage play
right.
as well, yes.
Yeah. And you did it in a high school.
Yeah, can I introduce it?
Yeah, go for it.
So I went to
Better be better than my introduction.
I'm a writer now. I went to my old high school, and I graduated high school a long, long time ago. But I went to my old high school. We were looking at ways to raise money to do this trailer that Ray had an idea for. And so I went to my old high school, and I said, hey, what do you think about doing a live reading of the movie script? And I explained to them, I had gone to some readings before where the actors just stood on stage with a script in front of a microphone. There was no action. They just acted in front of a microphone. And I presented it to the school, and they said, yeah, why don't you come in? And I said, well, why don't we have the producer come in as well to work with the kids and give them a real experience? And so we went in and met them, and I'll turn it over to Ray for the rest of it.
Yeah, and then I was dragged along, and I said, well, we want to do something, and maybe perhaps more than just a reading, because, of course, the entertainment factor was kicking in me, and I was like, we can do a whole stage play. We'll do a whole thing. We'll have smokes, and we'll have guns, and we'll have effects, and we'll have fighting. It's going to be great. And I started to get all into it, and we were lucky enough that they actually said yes to most of what I wanted to do. But they had a very limited stage for us to work with. Unfortunately, they're still building, and we're actually helping them raise funds as well as raise funds for our little thing at the same time to get them a stage or to get whatever equipment they might need. So what we made on that, we also gave back to the school, because that was one thing Bill really wanted to do. He really wanted to give back to the school, mm-hmm. not just as an experience, which it was an experience like no other, which is what we always said when we were doing it, but it's also true. Wanted to give back to the students, not just in experience, but in monetary mm-hmm. value as well. So we went in there, and they were gracious enough to let us take over for a month. We only got a month to do it all.
Wow. And then did you have a live performance, or did you do a couple of them? Or
we did three.
Three.
We did three live performances. Oh, yep. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Sunday was a matinee.
How did you two meet?
You want the real answer?
Well, whatever you want to share.
I doubt it was on Match.com. So.
I married his sister.
Oh.
Yeah, so you're his brother-in-law.
Yeah, I am, unfortunately.
Bless you, my son.
I know. It's difficult, but I've been able to manage so far.
I went to him and told him I was going to propose to his sister, and his exact words were, "Are you sure you want to be a part of this family?"
Yeah, so I was knocking my own family before I knew about Bill.
Wow.
But have you produced other films? And tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, when I was starting up, and of course living out here, you kind of get the film bug. And I started off as a writer, actually, as well. I was writing before I knew I was writing. I was writing screenplays before I even knew what a screenplay was. I was directing before I even knew what directing was. And that was a lot of the way you do. You take your camcorder and your film and stuff, and you're directing your friends, and you're not realizing that, you know, later on you're looking at it and you're going, I didn't need to go to school for this. I was doing it when I was in junior high school and elementary school.
And probably now more than ever, kids are, you know.
Yeah, and you have access to a lot better tech than I did back then. But it was all of the creative processes that just gets you going in this city and town. And then I went to film school and learned what they taught me what they knew, and found out that it wasn't too much more than what I had already known. And I spent a lot of money doing that. But it's all about making connections, unfortunately. When it comes to this part of the world, you have to make connections with other people, which help you get where you want to go in the industry. It's not always the talent. It's about who you know. Mm-hmm. And that's an unfortunate aspect of that. But that's really what you go to film school for, to make the connections with the other students. So, you know, when they get something, they bring you along. So in that course of a time, I paired myself with a few of the students I got to know and like, and people that I really enjoyed working with, or people that were successful, and we would go and we would do our own little projects. We've done a lot of, as everybody probably in this town has heard before and done, pilots, and we've done a lot of, you know, scripts and stuff that have gone either minimal success to no success, but even a minimal success is kind of a success sometimes in this industry, and where we've actually filmed pilots and gotten stuff to a certain point, and then nobody wants it, and then nobody takes it. And so with Saragossa, I was looking to do something, because I had written a lot of features while I was, you know, doing nothing. And Bill told me he had written a book. I said, sure, I'll read it, see if I like it. I really enjoyed it. And it kind of gave me the challenge to adapt something. I'd never adapted something from an original piece and taken it and turned it into a screenplay. I've done a few things like that, but never really at this scope. And he allowed me to do that. And for the most part, like you said earlier, we got along with every change I made. I may have tweaked the line here. I may have cut out a character there that I didn't think needed. I may have changed the action that was pivotal to the book that now is somebody else is doing. But in the grand scheme of things, I hope he thinks that it all comes together in a very nice way.
I noticed every single change, too. Single change when I read the script, I noticed.
Oh, I'm at two words here. Joe Dog.
Joe Dog.
We're back to Joe Dog.
That's a big one.
Hey, let me sell some freight real quick, and we'll get back to talking about ULTL shippers out there, chances are you're looking for a great company to help you move your freight. Look no further. Target Freight Management is and should be your company of choice. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved the way you want to move it. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com. Again, that's 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com. You won't be sorry, and I'm just stepping all over my tongue. Sorry, Mike. Bobby's taking pictures over here.
I always like to get a few shots, you know, to post on our Facebook page.
I know. Okay, question.
Yes, sir.
Either one of you. Now, you both are writers. You're self-admitted.
Yes,
sure.
Have you ever had writer's block?
I don't believe in it.
Okay, we need to be keeping track.
Actually. We really should, because that's two in a row.
Podcast and write down the yeses and the noes.
What about you, Ray?
No, I've never had writer. I've had writer's remorse.
Oh, I have that all the time.
You go back and you keep tweaking it, but never a block. I usually know where I'm going with my stories, or at least I have a premise. That's a big thing. A premise. You have to have some kind of a premise, and you know where you want that premise to go. So I never have a block.
I try to keep my chapters, so I know what's going to happen, start and end of the chapter. So just fill in the blanks at that point.
Right.
But I get it occasionally. I mean, I believe in somewhat of a writer's block. I don't know if you want to call it a writer's block. Maybe it's just a brain fart. I don't know.
Just a freeze.
It's just a freeze, yeah. It's like cold ice cream and brain cells.
Yeah, but the cure is to sit down and start typing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any writer who has writer's block, all you seriously have to do is start typing, and it's going to be terrible for the first 25 or 30 words. And then after that, your talent and your instincts will take over. Mm-hmm.
And then you go back and fix.
You go back and fix those 25 words, or like Joe Dog, you cut them out completely.
We'll have to subtitle this show. It's all about Joe Dog. Where is Joe Dog?
You know, my creative writing teacher, her big thing was, and she said it constantly, was tell your story. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be good. Doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be yours.
Well,
so tell your story.
And I think I'm thinking back to Joe Harrington, a guest that we had a few weeks ago. We talked about lightning, being hit by lightning. He had a thing for lightning.
Yeah, he does.
Anyway, but he talked a lot about that story. That's the piece. That's what's so important, is tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the crux of it.
Yeah. It can always be fixed.
Yeah. That's what rewriting is.
Exactly. And, you know, but I tell people, we got somebody calling in. Let's see who they are.
Hello, caller.
Hello, caller. Center and sign in, please.
They hung up.
Uh-oh. Oh.
What's your name?
Oh, I don't know who you were calling, but please call back. We'll get to It's a 626 number. Is that your?
Oh, yeah.
That's our town. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
That's a little scary.
WC.
Call back. If you want to call the studio and talk to either Ray or Bill, the number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And what were we talking about?
I want to address one thing.
Okay.
One of the things that Ray sort of glossed over when you asked his experience is that many of the things that he has produced have won awards at some of the festivals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he didn't bring that up, so I'd like to...
Hi, this is a writer's block. Who am I speaking to? Hello?
Anybody there?
No.
Is it a very shy person?
It's 626-665.
Oh, are we allowed to...
Don't say the number back.
That's the only ones you're going to get.
That's my wife. Actually.
Okay.
Oh, call back.
What's your wife's name?
My wife's name is Evelyn.
Evelyn,
call back. I'll try to get to the phone before you hang up.
I have a couple of questions while we're waiting to hear.
Wait a minute.
Oh.
Here comes producer. What, Ron?
What did you do?
I didn't do anything. I just answered it.
Technical error.
Oh.
Oh.
There we go.
Oh, so I just hung up on her again.
Call back.
Nice.
Call back.
Well, now she's never going to call.
Oh.
I'm really sorry. Well, let me give you that number again, Evelyn. It's 818-602-4929, and call your husband back. I'm terribly sorry.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
I always want to ask this every show, and I always forget. Who are you reading now? Is there a book that you're reading that's on the nightstand or in your electronic reader? Or, you know, like, what are you reading now?
Just one. Right now I'm reading a new book, A New History of Billy the Kid, as if it hasn't already all been told, which is sort of research pleasure for me. And then just strictly for pleasure, I'm reading an older book called The Hollow Chocolate Bunnies of the Apocalypse by Rankin. It is hysterical and brilliant.
I got to write that down.
Hollow Chocolate Bunnies of the Apocalypse.
Hi, this is Writer's Block. Is this Evelyn?
Yes, hello.
Hi, this is Jim. Hey, Bill's sitting right next to me, and I'm sorry I didn't pick up the phone fast enough.
Hi. No worries.
What's going on?
You really have a question for us, Evelyn?
I think you know the whole story.
Hello?
Hello? Yeah. We're here.
I just wanted to call in and let you know that a lot of the cast members from the play are listening right now, and they are really, really enjoying this.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, we're so glad.
Oh, man, that's great.
And I know that Bill kind of wrote about the group as the Brotherhood of Fire.
Yeah, we went through Trial by Fire.
You went through such a wonderful experience all together.
Here, let's give them a little.
Yeah.
That's for all you guys.
Yeah,
the original cast of Saragossa.
I bet they would probably all like to do another project with you.
We've done projects with many of them, actually. We've remained really close with quite a few of them.
I actually have. I told, we have something planned in the near future that we might bring them back for, which they don't know. I told you, Bill. They don't know that. But if they're listening out there, there is something we are planning. Some of them may know. To bring them back and do a little project.
And they heard it here first.
Right, hoorah!
Follow our Facebook page for an update on that from Ray.
these young talents that did the play with us, many of them had never acted before, or had done very minimal acting, and Ray pulled performances out of them that they had within that they just let go. It was awesome. It was a great, great performance. We'll get you there. The DVD.
Yeah, we'd love to see it.
Love to see the DVD. And I know that can change a student's life forever, whether they go into acting or doing more, or just having that experience and knowing that they've done that can be real character developing, and that's with you forever. You look back on it as one of those turning points in your life.
I was in theater in high school.
Yeah.
And junior high.
Yeah.
And college.
I was
actually.
Too. I
but
was
we always
too.
Felt that if we could reach one of the kids, you know, not that any of them were troubled, but if we could reach them and inspire them to go forward, then that's what we were all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a great experience for me personally to go out there, and it was very much of a boot camp experience for us, because we only had a very limited amount of time to get all this stuff done. I had them come in every day after school as much as they could, because we just had very little amount of time to get all this done. And just throw them out there. We originally said, if you have to, have your script on stage. You don't have to memorize all this stuff. They all memorized every
That's
line.
Amazing.
And we're out there
good
doing
for them.
Everything.
Yeah.
Good for
well,
them.
Sometimes having a short deadline can really bring out the best in that.
Well, it almost
you know.
Killed me.
Yeah.
But for everybody else, I'm
it
sure
almost
it was
killed
amazing.
Alex when she jumped off the stage.
Are you still with us, Evelyn?
Yeah,
okay.
I am. I didn't want to take up too much time, but I know that there are two characters I would love to hear you guys talk about from Zaragoza.
Okay.
And one of them is Dub and how Bill broke his mother's heart.
Yeah.
About Dub. And then also about Wilcox. And then I'll leave the line and let you guys talk.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
Hey, great questions.
Bye,
thank you.
Thanks,
okay. All right.
Bye-bye. Nice talking to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. So.
Okay. So just to address those two quickly, I'll do Will Cross first. Will Cross is one of
Bookie.
The guys.
We have another caller.
Oh, all right.
Bookie, are you there?
Is Jerry here? She.
Oh, well,
us?
She's called in.
Hello, Jerry.
Jerry. Oh, Jerry. Bye, Jerry.
Call us back.
Will Cross is one of the bad guys in Zaragoza. He's a bounty hunter who's come to town hoping to collect the bounty, obviously. And this was one of the actresses in the play who had never acted at all. She was a freshman when we met her, and freshmen weren't allowed to act at the school.
Well, before you go into that, a little side note, we had more females available to act in our play than males, so we did a lot of role reversals.
That's
where
cool.
We
right.
casted a lot of females in these male roles. We weren't telling them to play them as females. They were just females in a male role.
A la Shakespeare.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. So Will Cross is a male character in the book who was played by a young woman named Alex, and she had never acted before, and we met her early on, and she threw herself into it. She really did. She wanted to learn all aspects of it, not just the acting side of it, but she wanted to shadow Ray a little bit. And she was great. She was great. She quickly proved herself, and she had no problem playing a male role, even though I think the drama instructor at the school advised her against it. And the only heart-stopping moment we had during rehearsals, and let me just say that Ray had a cast of 19 students. 19 students. He had 8 rehearsals, I believe.
If that.
Yeah, never had a full rehearsal. The
wow.
The full cast never showed up at a single rehearsal, so he had to piece it together. On the dress rehearsal night, this character, Will Cross, gets killed. And
spoiler alert.
Yeah, and... one of the characters said, help me take care of the trash. And they go and they roll him off the
Yeah, I remember that from the book.
Off the walk. Well, during this dress rehearsal, the stage they were on was about a 3.5 foot tall stage off the floor, and Alex, throwing herself into the role, decided to roll off the stage.
She suggested that wouldn't it be more realistic if she were to fall off the stage when they drag her off the stage? And before I could say, no, I don't have insurance for you people, she was throwing herself off the stage. And
you should have seen Ray's face.
But those are the memory makers.
Yeah. And the other character she mentioned, Dub, was the only character modeled after a friend of mine. another writer, actually, who embodied the part of Dub. And Dub, for those of you who don't know, is the deputy who used to be the town drunk and got a chance to redeem himself and is now the deputy. And he's modeled after a very good friend of mine named Irv Tibbs. And the way I broke my mother's heart Dub goes through his own death. And it's probably the most heartbreaking death I wrote. And my mom, who had fallen in love with this character, called me and said she wouldn't read anything else. And that's not true. She didn't say that. But she was very upset that Dub got killed. And my buddy Irv, who I wrote about or who I modeled him after, now tells people that I'm the only man that ever has killed him.
My sister-in-law wouldn't talk to me for months when I killed off Jolly Goodman.
Well, and I know as a reader, especially when I was first beginning to read Western fiction, when favorite characters were their time was done, it was very upsetting. But as I've read more and more, and when I went back to reread Saragossa and revisit it after my initial reading years ago, it was appropriate, though.
It was
appropriate, and I don't mean that as, you know, it didn't affect me the same way going through a second time when now it's like, you know what, this propels the story forward.
Well, that was it.
And
it
this
was
is character developing. This was a necessary loss.
Right.
You know, I think Bill and Ray will agree that characters have a shelf life. And some of them, especially characters like Jolly Goodman, you know, he serves a purpose. He's in the book to introduce you to the man, to the character of the hunter, and he goes through, and then when his time is over, Now, what do? You just don't stop writing about him. So he slit his throat in the middle of the night.
Yeah, because he can show up in flashbacks and, you know, other types of
things,
you know, down the road.
And he did. And
because they have an impression on the characters that remain.
And you get people calling, I'm sure you get it, you know, what did you kill him off for? I really liked him.
Yeah.
Well, and did your comments always, you know, or mine is, I didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, Dub was...
the ghost did it.
He's been the favorite since the book came out. I think he's probably the most popular character in there. And he died heroically.
Yes.
I will say that. So it was a fitting death for a hero. The sequel, obviously he's not in it. But the third book, if I ever get around to it, is a prequel to Saragossa, and it is Dub's story.
Mm-hmm. So just to throw this out there, Dub dies even more heroically in the screenplay.
Okay.
This is true. This
Stay
is
tuned. True.
Is it one of these grab your chest and stagger back?
I'm not going to deny what it is. You guys have to come out to the theaters.
The screenplay, even though it is minus Joe Dog, is actually quite good.
Okay, we got an 818 number calling in. Let's find out who this might be. Hi, you're on the writer's block. Who am I speaking to?
You're speaking to Alex Moran, former cast of the Saragossa.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Hello.
We're so glad you called in. Welcome.
Thank you. I'd just like to throw out, personally, for me, I think that, you know, throwing myself off the stage was the better way to go.
Realism.
Okay, Miss Director.
I do have a question. I want to know, why do we have to kill Will Crossoff? I think he would make a very great villain for the sequel.
If you remember, I asked you if you wanted to write his origin story.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. We should get working on that. I would love to get that started.
Yeah, just because they took the trash out doesn't mean that we, how do we know that that character actually, you know, was really fatally wounded?
Yeah,
maybe. I mean, maybe the character really was able to get up and, you know, remove, you know, go on to be in the next story.
Right.
Hey, Alex.
Yeah, there you go.
Alex, this is Ray. I want to let you know, in the screenplay, it's pretty obvious he's dead. I'm sorry.
But maybe as a twin, a female twin.
Yeah, there you go.
I killed him pretty good.
So, well, Alex, I have to ask, did it hurt when you fell off the stage?
You know what? It really didn't. People might say otherwise because there was maybe a big thud, but it didn't hurt.
I think it was a bigger fall than you expected, though.
Oh yeah, it was a bigger fall. I was just acting and I was thinking, oh, you know, I totally got this, and yeah, it was a steeper fall for sure.
Well, you know, when you're 15, you just bounce.
Yeah. They just bounce.
Featherweights.
Well, if there's one thing I like to say is that what's special about Saragossa is that it wasn't just a great book and it wasn't just a great play and it's not going to be just a great film. It really impacted a group of teenagers, you know? And when you're young like that, you know, you don't really know what you stand up against and, you know, there's a lot of bad things out there and these people all just trusted us with this 1 month to put on this production and it came out amazing and they touched us forever.
Whoa.
Well, and Alex, you know, those of us that are involved in the Western genre, whether it's film or stories or music, Western music, we are all trying to figure out what do we need to do to involve the younger audience. And so we need your input. How do we need to be approaching this material in a way that captivates folks your age?
You know what? It was funny because I was just talking about this to my dad, and he's a big Western fan as well. And I feel like what you guys were saying earlier is that Westerns are trying to be modernized. But especially as Western lovers and in the Western scene, we know deep down there's nothing better than a classic Western. If we can bring that back out and, you know, captivate people with that, I think it'll be enough.
That's very encouraging words. Thank you for sharing that.
I think to piggyback on that a little bit, Alex, I'm going to step on your toes here. I think the important thing to get the younger generation is to involve them, not just present them with it, just to involve them with it. It's made all the difference to all of us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. And just involving, especially with Saragossa, you know, the more we learned about it, the more energized we got, the more excited we got, and that's what it really is, you know, involvement and learning about it, because learning can take you so far. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Alex, by the way, just won. She's a filmmaker herself, and she just won a national contest.
Oh my goodness.
Congratulations.
Thank
you.
This is Ray. I take all the credit for that.
Well, you know, we hate to cut you short, Alex, but we're going to have to start wrapping up. But thank you so much for the phone call.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Wow.
That was really fun. Thank you for calling in.
Very cool. Guys, you want to start giving out your information, websites, email addresses?
How people can find you.
We're not going to do phone numbers.
No phone numbers this time. Well, you can find us on Facebook, Bill Wilbur. I'm on Facebook. And my blog is... Let's see, what did I call it?
Word Slayer
at Blogspot. And my email address, for anybody that's interested, is newbill, spelled like the animal, GNUBILL@yahoo.com. And I'll let Ray tell you his and sort of where we're headed from here.
Yeah, just a little spiel for anybody that may care to hear, that we are currently trying to get Saragossa turned into a feature film. And within the end of February and March, we're looking to get some investors together and do a little presentation for them. So if anybody's interested in that, please feel free to contact us. We have a website up for King Profit Films, KINGPROFIT Films saragosa.com. You can leave us a message there anytime. There's a little investors link there. You can learn more about Saragosa. We have a little snippet of the trailer we did in there for you guys to watch, and a little pitch package we also presented to investors as well for people to watch there too. And if anybody's interested, please email us. Let us know. We will give you guys information on when we're planning on doing this event to kind of showcase. And that is the event I'm hoping to also bring some of these kids back and do maybe a little snippet here and there of the play we did as well, just to kind of show everybody all the facets that we've had to go through to kind of make Saragosa happen. And it's been an incredible ride.
Excellent. Well, thanks, guys, for coming in. It's been a great time having you. And next week we have...
Troy D. Smith, Western author.
Right. And following week, we have Jillian Boyd and her writing partner. And that's when Russ will be in with me, because that's your concert
series.
That
kicks off our 2016 concert series.
Right.
That night with the Cowboy Way coming in from New Mexico.
Ooh.
Nice.
Did you sell it out?
No, we have tickets available. And call us at 661-255-7087. Tell us you heard about it on the Writer's Block, and you'll receive a discounted ticket price.
There you go. I'll be here.
I know. And I'll be missing you.
Thank you all for listening tonight. And we will be back next Thursday at 8 o'clock right here on LA Talk Radio, the Writer's Block.